did drastically increase our renewable energy footprint. But before we wrap up, I want to know if there's anything we've missed. And I know we've missed a lot. There's so much more that we could talk about all the beautiful characters in your stories. But what do you want to make sure really gets included in this conversation that we haven't touched on yet?
I think what feels important to me is that the Western civilization story that we all, you know, live within teaches us that humans have to manage everything. I would argue that the management can itself create a lot of problems. In fact, climate change may be what happens after generations of trying to manage small problems, and that humans as an animal might be better off when we start riding the water instead of trying to control the water.
Before I let you go, where can people find your work? What's your website? How do you want people to engage with these books?
Well, my website's just my name, johnlarrison.com. And boy, when you buy a book from an independent bookstore, 40% of the money you spend stays local instead of going to Jeff Bezos. And the author actually gets a big vote of confidence from that. The publisher notices that in a way they don't notice Amazon sales. And it helps authors stay in the business of writing. So whenever possible, try to support your local booksellers. You're really doing a good thing for writers, for the booksellers themselves, and for your local community.
Well, once again, those books are The Ancients, Whiskey When We're Dry. There's others that I haven't read yet, but I can't wait to. So, John Larrison, thank you so much for joining us on Coast Range Radio.
Thanks so much for having me. This has been a great time.
And that's it for this episode of Coast Range Radio. If you like the show, please help me grow the audience. Tell your friends about it. Follow Coast Range Radio on social media, even though we hate social media. Best of all, directly share it with at least two people by texting the link to our podcast feed. It's super easy, super quick, and it means a lot. Once again, my new email is coastrangeradio@gmail.com. I encourage you to reach out anytime. Thank you so much for listening to Coast Range Radio. Let's make it through this together.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
What does the average KBOO listener think of self-help radio?
This is so hard and complicated.
I have no idea what it is.
What's this old-time music?
I feel so proud of myself.
It seems kind of worthless.
Why does it have to make so much noise?
It feels very hipster.
That's the worst thing.
Look at how humanity has used their intellect.
Self-help radio, a different theme explored with music and talk every week. Tuesdays, midnight to 3 a.m. on KBOO Portland.
You know, the policy says you're incapable of deploying, and that's part of the problem. And then they pull people who are actively deployed, accomplishing their mission, and send them home.
Colonel Bree Fram is a proud transgender service member. In fact, the highest ranking active duty transgender person serving in the United States military.
I plan on making my case that transgender people are capable, competent, and serve with distinction.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. Hungarians protest Orbán's pride ban, federal court order Trump's military trans ban, and trans Colonel Bree Fram salutes inclusive armed forces. Those stories and more this week now that you've chosen This Way Out.
I'm John Dyer V.
And I'm Sarah Montague.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending March 22nd, 2025. Thousands of Hungarians hit the streets of Budapest, chanting, "The people demand their rights," after Parliament passed a ban on LGBTQ pride marches. Opposition lawmakers set off rainbow flares in the chamber and distributed photoshopped images of autocratic President Viktor Orban kissing Russian President Vladimir Putin. Orban backed the bill, an extension of Hungary's 2021 child protection law. His 15-year reign as prime minister has been marked by anti-LGBTQ animus. Orban celebrated the March 18th passage of the Pride ban, tweeting, "We won't let woke ideology endanger our kids." Protesters blocked traffic on Budapest's iconic Erzsébet Bridge with signs reading, "The first Pride was a riot. If you take our human rights, be ready for human wrongs." The European Union was quick to condemn the repressive law. EU Commissioner for Equality, Haja Labib, tweet proclaimed, "Our union is one of freedom and equality. Everyone should be able to be who they are, live and love freely. The right to gather peacefully is a fundamental right to be championed across the European Union. We stand with the LGBTQI community in Hungary and in all member states." Orban and the EU have been in contention for more than a decade. The country's anti-queer laws have led to billions in EU financial aid being frozen. Budapest Pride organizers are defiant and promise to march as planned on June 28th. Under the new law, each of them and all attendees can be targeted using facial recognition and fined up to 200,000 forints, about $550. Last year, more than 30,000 people joined the event, and this year could be even bigger. Jojo Majersik of Budapest Pride told the Associated Press, "We've received many messages and comments from people saying, 'Until now, I haven't gone to Pride, I didn't care about it, but this year I'll be there, and I'll bring my family.'" Security forces and riot police may have their hands full.
A court-ordered pause at the Trump administration's plan to expel all transgender service members will remain in effect after a heated battle late in the day on March 21st. Judge Anna Reyes of the U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia had granted the government's emergency request that morning to review her temporary injunction against the ban. The Federal District Court's first openly lesbian judge has repeatedly pressed the Trump lawyers to provide specific proof of their claims. They argue that trans service members are disruptive and impair troops' ability to carry out their missions, but still have no data to satisfy Reyes' concerns. Their latest claim is that the ban only affects enlistees with gender dysphoria, the medical condition that transgender people experience when their gender identity and gender presentation are incongruent. Reyes questioned how it differs from any other treatable condition that does not preclude military service. She told beleaguered Trump lawyer Jean Lynn, "You are still excluding people who identify as transgender by focusing on those with gender dysphoria. The policy's impact is the same. This is still a ban on transgender service members." Reyes went on to slam at length what she sees as the government's hypocritical presentation of the issue. In her words, "I am not going to abide by government officials saying one thing to the public, saying what they really mean to the public, and then coming in here to the court and telling me something different, like I'm an idiot. I am not an idiot. This court is not going to be gaslit." The Secretary of Defense called it a transgender ban. "This idea that you all can just come in here and pretend, or have us pretend, that's what's happening, is not actually what's happening, is totally unacceptable. Everyone knows what the ban is intended to do. Everyone knows." Judge Reyes has now extended the stay on the injunction pending further submissions on the morning of March 28th by both the plaintiffs and the government. Thus, the Pentagon's previously announced March 26th deadline for trans enlistees to voluntarily resign is on hold. Reyes also specified that if any transgender service member is negatively affected before the stay is lifted, she would expeditiously consider their request for a temporary restraining order.
The U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs is phasing out treatment for gender dysphoria. The VA announced on March 17th that hormone replacement therapy and related health care for trans patients not already in treatment would be discontinued. The VA does not provide gender-affirming surgeries, but has, until now, granted letters in support of veterans seeking them. President Donald Trump's executive order defending women is the justification given for the withdrawal of care. VA Secretary Doug Collins demonstrated his sensitivity to the issue by telling reporters, "I mean no disrespect to anyone, but VA should not be focused on helping veterans attempt to change their sex. The vast majority of veterans and Americans agree, and that is why this is the right decision." Several veteran organizations don't agree, including Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America. Their statement called it the ultimate betrayal of those who've served and sacrificed so much for our country. Meanwhile, several transgender prisoners are suing the Trump administration over the withdrawal of their gender-affirming health care. This according to reports in Mother Jones. The ACLU asked a federal judge on March 17th to issue a temporary injunction allowing treatment to proceed while the legal challenge continues. At least one other lawsuit is challenging attempts by the Trump administration to move trans female inmates to men's prisons.
Finally, shareholders of the Walt Disney Company want nothing to do with the right-wing push to move back to the political neutral. A proposal submitted by the right-wing think tank National Center for Public Policy Research demanded Disney's withdrawal from the Human Rights Campaign's Corporate Equality Index. It also called for the ending of the company's efforts to protect all employees from discrimination, offer equal benefits, and encourage an inclusive culture. The company's board of directors recommended a no vote, noting that the proposal would not provide any additional value to shareholders, as the center claimed. Barely 1% of Disney shareholders opposed the board's recommendation at their March 20th investors meeting. To Eric Blom, the Disney vote gives us a clear statement of values from Disney shareholders. Blom is the vice president of corporate citizenship at the Human Rights Campaign Foundation. He said, despite the growing politicization of DEI and workplace inclusion, leading global businesses remain committed to the belief that a welcoming, inclusive environment drives innovation, boosts productivity, and strengthens the bottom line. More than 765 companies participate in HRC's Corporate Equality Index, despite an organized online campaign in recent months to force them to abandon their workplace policies and programs promoting diversity, equity, and inclusion. DEI initiatives have been quashed at several major corporations in response to boycott threats by right-wing influencer Robbie Starbuck. His victims have included Amazon, Google, Ford Motor Company, Harley-Davidson, Target, Walmart, Microsoft, Meta, and Zoom. Disney has scored a perfect 100% in the Corporate Equality Index annually since 2007. Its shareholders now join Costco and Apple investors in resisting pressure from Starbucks and his internet trolls to dump so-called woke policies. However, some critics say that Disney's product may not be keeping up with its shareholders' commitment. They point to the axing of a transgender subplot in the Disney Pixar animated TV miniseries Win or Lose, and the disappearance of Agent Pleakley's drag disguises in the live-action version of Lilo and Stitch.
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude, for the week ending March 22nd, 2025. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon and Lucia Chappelle, produced by Brian DeShazor, and brought to you by you.
Thank you. Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more. For This Way Out, I'm John Dyer V. Stay healthy.
And I'm Sarah Montague. Stay safe.
Straight military personnel will have to shower with homosexual...
To accept the principle that homosexuals can't shower with other people is a degree of discrimination that goes far beyond this. I mean, we don't get ourselves dry cleaned.
Hello, I'm Barney Frank, and you are listening to This Way Out, the international radio show for all our sexually diverse communities.
Our listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter.
Email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And through your financial contributions to our program.
More information about how you can give is online at thiswayout.org.
Thank you.
Transgender members of the U.S. military are on tinderhooks, waiting for the courts to rule on President Donald Trump's order to expel them. The Pentagon's original deadline for their voluntary resignations is running neck and neck with a federal judge's next hearing on the matter. The judicial battle will rage on, perhaps all the way to the Supreme Court. Meanwhile, a courageous trans soldier whose family has a history of valiant service refuses to leave her frontline post. She shared her story with This Way Out's David Hunt.
In the closing days of World War II, Sergeant Fred Hersicorn found himself on the receiving end of a tongue lashing by General George S. Patton. The famously quick-tempered American general ordered Hersicorn and his crew to remove the heavy sandbags and extra armor they'd attached to the outside of their M4 Sherman tank, a vehicle notoriously vulnerable to the Germans' armor-piercing Panzerfaust grenades. Speed, not safety, was Patton's priority, as he led the Army's fast but lightly armored tanks across Europe to liberate the continent from the Nazis. Hersicorn's granddaughter, a colonel in the United States Space Force, probably wishes she had some of that discarded armor from World War II. But its value would be little more than symbolic. The attacks she faces today aren't on the battlefield. They're coming from inside the Pentagon, where she works to keep the U.S. combat ready. But don't call it friendly fire. The attacks are not accidental. Colonel Bree Fram, the proud granddaughter of a decorated Army tank commander, is a proud transgender service member. In fact, the highest-ranking active-duty transgender person serving in the United States military. To the commander-in-chief, Donald Trump, Fram, like all transgender service members, is the enemy. I'm David Hunt. On March 11th, I sat down with Colonel Fram to discuss President Trump's executive order banning transgender people from serving in the military. Unless the order is delayed or struck down by a federal judge, the military will begin purging its ranks of transgender service members this week at the direction of the Department of Defense. In fact, Fram says, the purge has already begun ahead of schedule.
We don't know exactly what's going to happen, but we're already seeing the impact. We are seeing people placed on administrative leave. We are seeing people have punitive action taken against them, losing spots at school, being pulled out of prestigious programs, people being returned from deployment. You know, the policy says you're incapable of deploying, and that's part of the problem. And then they pull people who are actively deployed, accomplishing their mission, and send them home. People are also taking the voluntary separation action. So we are losing highly qualified people already because of the policy.
In his February 27th executive order, Trump said being transgender conflicts with a soldier's commitment to an honorable, truthful, and disciplined lifestyle, and is not consistent with the humility and selflessness required of a service member. The Trump administration is using both carrots and sticks to encourage trans service members to voluntarily quit the military. Those who leave willingly will receive significantly more severance pay and won't have to repay any bonuses they received, even if they have a remaining service obligation. Service members who stay and fight for their rights face a hostile, even degrading, work environment. They'll be forced to follow the standards of dress and grooming that align with the gender they were assigned at birth. That extends even to the bathroom and shower facilities they'll be required to use and how they'll be addressed by subordinates.
So that's a huge disincentive because no one wants to experience the dehumanization that comes with something like a forced detransition, which is what's going to be attempted on people based on the way the policy is written. I served under male standards for more than 15 years prior to being able to transition. And it does not matter how many years you've transitioned, or for trans people that have joined after transitioning, the government's position is that any history of it will force you to revert to previous standards. So there really is no way out right now as the policy is written.
Why? You may ask, would anyone go through the indignity of remaining in an organization that clearly does not value or respect them? Well, it turns out, the United States military is not just any organization, and service members, especially transgender service members, are not just government employees.
I plan on making my case that transgender people are capable, competent, and serve with distinction until the very last day I possibly can in wearing my nation's uniform. And that's incredibly important to me. I am a senior officer. I look around at the spirit of transgender service members and am so impressed by their courage and their bravery. How could I do anything less than try and stand with them and with the thousands of others who are making that same choice? Because we treat every single day as a gift. Every day is a gift in that we get to make more relationships with the people around us. We get to meet someone new who may never have met a trans person or a trans person in uniform before and shatter their stereotypes about who we are. And the longer we serve, the more opportunities we have to do that. And there's also the fact that we all took an oath to defend the Constitution of the United States. We have sworn to protect and defend this country, and we actually care. So we want to accomplish the mission we've been given and not let any of our teammates around us down, because if we depart, all of a sudden there's a hole in our unit that others have to fill and have to work even harder just to accomplish what the unit was doing while we were in it. There is absolutely a sense of responsibility and a duty to do not only what I can, but also to share the stories of others and to take care of others in any way that I possibly can. And that means working with people. That means picking up and answering emails and phone calls, not just from transgender service members, but also from their commanders and their peers, their leaders who call up and say, I've got someone in my unit. How can I help take care of them?
You're listening to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm David Hunt. The status of transgender service members in the United States military has been what Colonel Bree Fram calls a wild roller coaster. As the nation's highest-ranking active-duty trans officer, she's experienced many of the twists and turns.
We have had less than a decade of open service for trans people. Some people thought that we would actually have had it for longer because some people thought that when Don't Ask, Don't Tell was repealed in 2011, that trans people could serve openly. But it wasn't the case. It was going to be another 5 years until we got that, which I think was truly amazing that it was only 5 years, because trans rights in this country have historically been 10 or 20 years behind gay rights.
It was the last day of June 2016, Pride Month in the United States, when Defense Secretary Ash Carter announced the news. The ban on transgender military service was over. For Bree Fram, it was a defining moment in a journey that had started decades earlier.
I grew up and I knew from a very early age that there was something different about myself. I was Wonder Woman for Halloween when I was 3 and 4 years old, right alongside my younger sister. But I also, as I grew, understood what society's perception of trans people was, that this is something to be ashamed of. This is something to hide. And it really wasn't until my 30s that I got enough confidence in myself and enough self-understanding to say, no, this isn't something I like to do. This is who I am. But then I ran up against the barrier of, well, the military still says you can't serve openly. And so I did have to continue hiding who I was, even though I had accepted the fact that I was trans and that's really who I was. So by the time 2016 rolled around and the Secretary of Defense made the announcement that trans people could serve openly, I was ready to go to come out to the world. And I had a post ready to go on Facebook and an email to my colleagues. So as soon as he finished talking, I hesitated. It took me a minute or two to gather the courage to hit post, to hit send. And then I lost it. I ran away. I found the gym buried underneath the Pentagon, and I hopped on the elliptical machine, and I say I went nowhere faster than I'd ever gone anywhere in my life, because the nervous energy of wondering how is life going to be different now was killing me. But eventually I had to go back to the desk. I sat down, and one by one, my colleagues walked over to me, shook my hand, and said, "It's an honor to serve with you."
But the roller coaster ride was just beginning. A year later, in July 2017, the new president, Donald Trump, reinstated the ban with a tweet, a post on the social media platform Twitter. A month later, Defense Secretary James Mattis announced that currently serving transgender troops would be allowed to remain in the military, pending further study. While the Pentagon studied the issue, the federal courts blocked Trump's trans military ban until 2019. In April of that year, the ban was reinstated, but not rigorously enforced. President Joe Biden reversed the ban just 5 days after taking office in January 2021. And that's how things stood until Trump returned to the White House in January of this year. The better part of a decade serving proudly and openly in the military has given Fram a clearer view of what it means to be a member of America's armed forces.
What do we expect in the military? It's that if we look to our left, we look to our right, if bad things happen, that person has my back. And so the way you prove that in most cases is be competent. And if you meet the standard, you're part of the team, people are going to respect you and they're going to work with you. People being able to transition in the military is such an amazing opportunity, not only for that individual to be their best self, but also for their unit to then take advantage of those relationships and those capabilities that come with someone being their best self and really exhibiting that growth mindset that is so critical to all of us to say, I can be better tomorrow than I am today.
Fram takes courage and inspiration from the service members with whom she serves and from a grandfather who loved and supported her.
I was his only grandchild to go into the military, and he was so proud that every time I'd get promoted, he'd just get this big, wide-eyed smile. And unfortunately, he passed a day or two after the trans ban went into effect the first time in 2019, and I was at his bedside when that happened. And the last words he spoke were to me, because he had got to see who I was, who the real me was by that point. And he told me to keep doing what I'm doing. And it touches me to this day that someone like him could see me, could understand, could get it, and to continue to push me to new heights.
There's one other thing you should know about Fram's grandfather, Fred Hirsekorn. He was an immigrant, a German Jew, driven from his home by the hate and intolerance of an authoritarian regime. On March 11, 1936, Hirsekorn and his parents and grandmother boarded a ship in Cherbourg, France, bound for a new life in the new world. The journey he began that day, 89 years ago, isn't nearly over. It's carried on by his granddaughter as she walks, for now, the hallways of the inner rings of the Pentagon at the heart of America's armed forces. I'd like to thank Colonel Bree Fram for sharing her story for this program. You can learn more about her writings and her podcast, Forged in Fire, at BreeFram.com. For This Way Out, I'm David Hunt.
A preliminary injunction is currently keeping transgender service members like Colonel Fram from being expelled. U.S. District Judge Anna Reyes has directed the government and the plaintiffs in one of the lawsuits against the trans ban to bring her further submissions on March 28th. Reyes also vowed to see to it that individual transgender service members are protected until all the litigation is done. Thanks for choosing This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. News Wrap is reported this week by John Dyer V and Sarah Montague and produced by Brian DeShazer. Our correspondent was David Hunt. You heard part of the U.S. Space Force anthem Semper Supra and music by Simon and Garfunkel, Joy Hanna, and Michael Shines. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks Jim Kennedy of Dayton, Ohio, and Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley. Listener donors make this program possible. Ask us about how you can join them. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email us at info@thiswayout.org, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappelle. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts, and on KPOV Bend, Oregon, WOMR Provincetown, Massachusetts, 5GTR Mount Gambier, South Australia, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned, y'all.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
Our goal is to create an atmosphere devoid of genre, a place where quality is key. It's important for the world and future generations to understand the power of art and music. Ultimately, we are doing our part to carry on tradition. Tune into Passing Sound, the first Saturday of each month at 10 p.m. on KBOO Community Radio 90.7 FM. Or KBOO.FM, where we make musical structures for the listener to enjoy.
If I had walked in one of my children's bedrooms and seen this child predator targeting my children, I would become unglued.
The thought that any of us are out here to harm children rather than to foster their imagination and creativity is honestly shameful and disgusting on her part.
I'm living proof that introducing your kids to the gay agenda might result in them growing up to be governor.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Brian DeShazer. Trinidad and Tobago's appeal court outlaws queer sex again. A MAGA mouthpiece vexes Lil Miss Hot Mess, and Illinois' Governor J.B. Pritzker calls for aggressive progressives. Those stories and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Ren.
And I'm Marcos Najera.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending March 29, 2025. Same-gender sex is against the law in Trinidad and Tobago again. The Caribbean nation's High Court had called provisions of the Sexual Offenses Act irrational and illegal in 2018 when it overturned those laws. The government appealed, and on March 25th, Court of Appeal Justices Nolan Barreau and Charmaine Pemberton concluded that judges cannot change the law. The High Court ruling had said the laws banning private consensual adult activity violate constitutional guarantees of privacy and freedom of expression. However, the two prevailing appeal court justices agreed with the government's argument that only Parliament can overturn those statutes. The lone dissenter of the three-judge panel was Justice Vashishth Kokaram. Trinidad's Daily Express reported that Kokaram thought the government's appeal should have been dismissed. While the appeals court has made same-gender sex a crime again, it lowered the original penalty from 25 years in prison to 5. Jason Jones filed the original challenge to the British colonial-era laws in 2017. He's a citizen of Trinidad and Tobago who currently lives in the UK. Jones condemned this week's appeals court decision, posting on social media, "This regressive judgment has ripped up my contract as a citizen of TNT and again makes me an unapprehended criminal in the eyes of the law." In his words, the justices have effectively put a target on the back of LGBTQIA+ people and made us lower-class citizens in our own country. Jones vows an appeal to the Privy Council, a UK appellate court for British territories that also consider cases from Commonwealth countries like Trinidad and Tobago.
Six European countries are warning their transgender and non-binary citizens to beware of traveling to a Trump-ruled United States. The governments of Denmark, Finland, France, Germany, the Netherlands, and the United Kingdom cite the administration's edict that there are only two legal genders, male and female. The U.S. State Department has removed the option of an X gender marker on U.S. passports for trans and non-binary people. Therefore, foreign travelers whose government IDs do not reflect their birth gender could face serious obstacles to entering the country. The European travel advisories urge citizens to check with U.S. embassies in advance. The Trump policy could discourage tourists who want to visit the District of Columbia for World Pride later this year from entering the country. Trans or non-binary athletes planning to compete in the 2028 Olympic Games in Los Angeles could also be targeted. The door can apparently swing both ways, however. Canada's leading queer organization, EGAL, says its members will not be attending World Pride or any other U.S. event. The pro-LGBTQ+ African Human Rights Coalition is calling for a boycott of World Pride in protest of the antagonistic fascist regime.
The Trump administration's war on wokeness is spreading from starving children in Africa to starving science in Australia. U.S. officials have now pulled funding for research projects at 7 universities in Australia because of their policies encouraging diversity, equity, and inclusion. A 36-question survey went out to the Australian researchers soon after Trump's January inauguration. It inquired about steps taken to protect women and to defend against gender ideology. It also asked about addressing what it called Christian persecution. In announcing the funding cuts, a U.S. government memo warned, "The use of federal resources to advance Marxist equity, transgenderism, and Green New Deal social engineering policies is a waste of taxpayer dollars." Australia's Department of Education confirmed that the funding cuts affect the Australian National University, Monash University, the University of Technology Sydney, the University of New South Wales, Charles Darwin University, Macquarie University, and the University of Western Australia. According to the Sydney Star Observer, the total in lost funding approaches $600 million. Education Minister Jason Clare defended the lauded international reputation of Australian research universities. He said, "Ultimately, the U.S. will fund the research it wants to fund, but we will continue to make the case to the U.S. that collaborative research benefits both U.S. and Australia's interests." Australia's National Tertiary Education Union President Alison Barnes called the actions blatant foreign interference in Australia's independent research. In her words, "Donald Trump's hateful agenda is racist, transphobic, and misogynistic. The idea of research funding being tied to any of these values is sickening."
A preliminary injunction continues to halt the Trump administration's ban on transgender military service. U.S. District of Columbia Court Judge Ana Reyes heard the government's emergency motion to lift the injunction last week, but reinstated it on March 26. That was the deadline the Pentagon had set for trans service members to voluntarily leave the armed forces. The reinstated temporary injunction prevents the discharge of active duty transgender service members and the refusal to consider otherwise qualified trans enlistees. Trump administration lawyers claimed that the expulsions only affect enlistees with gender dysphoria, but Reyes has called that a distinction without a difference. She wrote, "The order affects only one group of people. All persons with gender dysphoria are transgender, and only transgender persons experience gender dysphoria." Reyes further concluded that the Pentagon's anti-trans policy was based on anti-trans animus and likely violates plaintiffs' Fifth Amendment rights.
A second preliminary injunction is also barring enforcement of Trump's efforts to expel trans troops from the military. U.S. District Judge Benjamin H. Settle of the Western District of Washington State announced his ruling on March 27th. He agrees with District Court of Columbia Court Judge Anna Reyes that the anti-trans policy is probably unconstitutional. Meanwhile, on March 24th, a federal judge in New Jersey granted a temporary restraining order to stop two U.S. Air Force discharges. The Pentagon has been trying to boot Master Sergeant Logan Ireland and Staff Sergeant Nicholas Bear Bade. After serving with distinction for years, the two airmen were recently removed from their posts and placed on involuntary administrative absence. U.S. District Judge Christine P. O'Hearn wrote that Ireland and Bade were both likely to succeed in challenging the ban and to prove the risk of irreparable harm, including loss of career, damage to their reputations, and violation of their constitutional rights. All these federal court rulings combine to keep transgender U.S. service members from being forced out of the military, at least for now.
Finally,
this was going to be stripped away from us, but, you know, luckily we fought the good fight. We spoke our word like we needed to.
Texas A&M University's embattled March 27th drag show went on after a federal judge upheld its constitutional free speech protections. Houston-based U.S. District Judge Lee Rosenthal ruled on March 24th against the university's ban on drag performances. Rosenthal wrote, "To ban the performance from taking place on campus because it offends some members of the campus community is precisely what the First Amendment prohibits." U.S. District Judge Matthew Kaczmarek of anti-abortion fame had backed the ban 2 years ago. He claimed it contained sexualized content that could be more regulated than other forms of speech. The sponsoring student group, the Queer Empowerment Council, appealed the case last year, but the U.S. Supreme Court refused to hear it. In the current ruling, Judge Rosenthal rejected the university's argument that allowing the show on campus could jeopardize federal funding due to the Trump administration's rejection of what it calls gender ideology. She said that allowing the event does not imply the university's endorsement of it. The Queer Empowerment Council was represented by the Foundation for Individual Rights and Expression, or FIRE. FIRE attorney Adam Steinbaugh called it a resounding victory for the First Amendment at public universities in Texas. He said, "State officials should stop trying to score political points at the expense of students' First Amendment rights." Texas A&M's grand production is called Draggyland for Drag and Aggie, the school nickname. The highlight was, of course, the crowning of the queen. Contest winner Maria Maria addressed her subjects saying,
"Drag is art, drag is love, the message is love, and that is what we spread, and that is just all that it is to it."
That's NewsWrap, Global Queer News with Attitude, for the week ending March 29th, 2025. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
NewsWrap is written by Greg Gordon and Lucia Chappell, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Thank you. Help keep us in the ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more. For This Way Out, I'm Rhett. Stay healthy.
And I'm Marcos Najera. Stay safe.
I won't continue to advocate that we wage a conventional political fight when what we really need is to become street fighters.
A rabble-rousing governor rallies the troops. But first, conservatives in the U.S. Congress are once again set on dismantling publicly funded media. Under the Trump administration, the right's reality is even more threatened by community broadcasters, where honest truth and LGBTQ plus voices are heard with the support from the public broadcasting system and National Public Radio. PBS and NPR's funding was the subject of a House committee hearing on March 26th. One rabid Republican representative tried to drag the proceedings into a little hot mess, but a California Democratic congressman queered her line of questioning. This Way Out correspondent Lauren Schmidt has the story.
Marjorie Taylor Greene, a vehemently anti-queer activist and federal lawmaker, fired shots at PBS and NPR, two pillars of public media. Greene seeks to defund these institutions, which serve as critical infrastructure in our country, known for educating and inspiring without corporate or political agenda. Although the hearing was supposed to focus on media, Greene took the opportunity to once again express her deep homophobia and ignorance about Drag Story Hour.
As a mother, if I had walked in my living room or one of my children's bedrooms and seen this child predator and this monster targeting my children, I would become unglued.
As Greene shared her anti-queer and anti-trans views, she held up a poster as a prop, featuring a photo of a drag queen used without permission. That drag queen was Lil Miss Hot Mess, who would become an icon of queer resistance overnight. An author, storyteller, and board member of Drag Story Hour, Lil Miss Hot Mess holds a PhD from New York University and works as a professor. I had the opportunity to speak with Dr. Lil Hot Mess just hours after Greene's public attack.
I woke up to a bunch of texts and messages across social media of friends alerting me to the fact that Marjorie Taylor Greene had held up this honestly beautiful headshot of myself in this hearing while she was attacking PBS and NPR and other public media. She certainly did not get my permission. She also showed a video of me that I had created as part of a performance for a series on a local PBS affiliate. She did not get permission to show that either. Folks like Marjorie Taylor Greene and her colleagues in the Republican Party have frequently attacked me, have attacked other members of Drag Story Hour, of drag and LGBTQ communities more broadly. So while it's deeply disappointing to have to listen to her disingenuous and hate and disinformation, at the end of the day, I'm sadly not surprised.
Representative Greene labeled you and other drag performers as child predators.
I really have no words for it. You know, the thought that any of us are out here to harm children rather than to, you know, celebrate them, educate them, you know, foster their imagination and creativity is honestly shameful and disgusting on her part. In many ways, and unfortunately, what we're seeing is just a recycling of the same tired old playbook by the right. It's taken on new forms. It's taken on new flavors. They've, in many ways, you know, mainstream Republican politicians have aligned themselves with even further and further right forces, including white supremacists, literal neo-Nazis, you know, many other really dangerous fundamentalists that have really come into the center of the Republican Party. I think it is also part of this desire to defund and literally tear apart the structures of public institutions that benefit so many people, and especially, you know, lower income working class people in this country. And I also think it's a broader attack on just a general sense of imagination and critical thinking. You know, I think that they want us to obey. They want us to feel scared so that we feel compelled to. And this is the kind of rising authoritarianism that we're seeing rising very quickly in this country right now in this second Trump presidency. And it's very scary. And so I do like to say, you know, while I don't think that attacks on drag performers are necessarily the most pressing issue in the country right now, I also don't think they're a complete distraction either. It's all part of the same playbook, and it's all part of, again, making us afraid, weakening us, and making us fear each other.
I also want to note, you are a professor and hold a PhD from NYU. And now to see you being targeted in a congressional hearing that's supposed to be about institutions like public media, institutions that bring us the news, do you see a connection there?
Yes. In many other times and places where, you know, various forms of fascism have taken hold, they do target educators, intellectuals, artists, all sorts of cultural workers. What I think is a little bit funny in this case is, you know, I don't think she realized who she is messing with. I always love to quote the great Sylvia Rivera, who said, "Hell hath no fury like a drag queen scorned." And I'll just say, I'm feeling pretty scorned right now and ready to step into the ring. Drag performers, we are loud. We know how to organize crowds, make people happy, make people listen to us. We've been, you know, part of a lot of major social movements in the LGBT community and beyond. So if they think we're going anywhere, they have another thing coming. We are going to keep lip syncing, keep reading to kids, keep twirling, and keep shining.
While she didn't have the opportunity to defend herself during the congressional subcommittee meeting, she wasn't without allies. Long Beach, California, Congressman Robert Garcia, who is young, Latino, and openly gay, didn't let Marjorie Taylor Greene's comments go unchecked. Using sharp political satire, he condemned her attacks and voiced strong support for public media and the queer community.
Is Elmo now, or has he ever been, a member of the Communist Party of the United States? A yes or no?
No.
Now, are you sure, Ms. Kerger? He also has a very dangerous message about sharing and helping each other. He's indoctrinating our kids that sharing is caring. Now, maybe he's part of a major socialist plot, and maybe that's why the chairwoman is having this hearing today. An important question, are Bert and Ernie part of an extreme homosexual agenda?
No.
Thank you, Ms. Kerger, and thank you for being a good sport. Now, I'm obviously using some humor here. The majority and our chairwoman should drop this attempt to silence media voices they don't like. So the message I think today is very, very simple. If we're gonna get rid of any puppeteers, we should get rid of the one that's actually controlling Donald Trump. Fire Elon Musk and save Elmo. And with that, I yield back.
Public media has secured congressional funding through 2027. However, its future remains uncertain due to the potential signing of an executive order. Reporting for This Way Out from Humboldt County in California, I'm Lauren Schmidt.
Lil Miss Hot Mess has a new book coming out in May titled Make Your Own Rainbow, A Drag Queen's Guide to Color. Her website is lilhotmess.com.
Our listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter.
Email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And through your financial contributions to our program.
More information about how you can give is online at thiswayout.org.
Thank you.
One of the speakers at the star-studded Human Rights Campaign's annual Los Angeles dinner on March 22nd was Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker. The Democratic firebrand has become a leading alpha liberal, advocating for aggressive opposition to Republican authoritarianism. Here are some highlights from Pritzker's passionate address.
I first got my start in activism right here in the state of California. As a little kid growing up in Silicon Valley in the 1970s, my mother was an activist for reproductive rights and LGBTQ rights. And she took me to pride parades back when, well, they weren't really parades, they were protests. So I have to laugh when I hear the right wing carry on about the dangers of exposing kids to trans people or same-sex couples, because I'm living proof that introducing your kids to the gay agenda might result in them growing up to be governor. Now, my mother marched and fought at a time when the advances in LGBTQ rights of the last 20 years would have been unthinkable. But she understood something important about the legacy that we leave our children, that the greatest thing that a parent can do for the next generation is plant seeds of freedom in the hopes that their kids are able to one day take refuge in the shade of a fully grown tree. What is so dangerous about the moment that we find ourselves in today is that we're watching the most vile and cruel people in our country take an axe to the trees planted and nurtured by the most courageous of Americans. For 10 years, ever since Donald Trump descended that ridiculous gold escalator to announce his entrance into the political world, I hoped that the Republican Party would seek out and find its better angels. Hope is a delicate and wonderful thing, a seed that we should never stop planting. But I won't let hope be a blindfold. And I won't continue to advocate that we wage a conventional political fight when what we really need is to become street fighters. Now, let me be clear. The Trump administration and his Republican lackeys in Congress are looking to reverse every single victory this community has won over the last 50 years. And right now, it's drag queens reading books and transgender people serving in the military. But tomorrow, it's your marriage license and your job they want to take. Bending to the whims of a bully will not end his cruelty. It will only embolden him. The response to authoritarianism isn't acquiescence. Bullies respond to one thing, and one thing only, a punch in the face. At its core, what Elon Musk and Donald Trump are doing isn't about efficiencies or cost savings. It's about giving their wealthy friends a tax break and making the middle class and veterans and public school kids pay for it. Meanwhile, the scariest part is that they're using the power of the presidency to try to delight their base by targeting vulnerable people, people they think can't fight back, calling them domestic enemies, or claiming they'll ruin American culture. Remember their slogan, "Make America Great Again." Authoritarians target vulnerable minority communities first because they think that if they can conquer those that they deem weak, and they can show everyone else who's boss. Which is why we can't sit back right now and wait to see what happens. If we wait, I guarantee you the battle will have already been lost. Donald Trump cannot take anything from us that we don't choose to give him. The question I get asked most right now is, so what can I do? What can I do? And I'm going to be blunt about this. Never before in my life have I called for mass activism, but this is the moment. Take to the streets, protest, show up at town halls. Jam the phone lines in Congress, 202-224-3121. And afford not a moment of peace to any elected representatives who are aiding and abetting Musk and Trump's illegal power grab. This is not a drill, folks. This is the real thing. Seize every megaphone you have. Go online and make a donation to the legal funds fighting Trump. When my future grandkids look back on this moment, I want them to know that my voice was one of the loudest in the room, screaming for justice and fighting against tyranny. And in the midst of this existential fight, this battle that seems to consume everything, well, let's not take the soul-sucking path of sacrificing the most persecuted for that which we deem to be most popular. I know that there are transgender children right now looking out at this world and wondering if anyone is going to stand up for them and for their simple right to exist. Well, I am. We are. We will. I know that amidst the ongoing assault on our institutions, it is easy for people to fall into despair about our democratic system. But I love this country too much not to fight for it. You're here tonight because you do too. When we say history repeats itself, it's not because the villains and battles don't evolve with the ages. They do. But the fight itself remains elemental. It's always men who would be king, blaming the suffering of the masses on those who look different or sound different or live differently. And since the dawn of time, the triumph of good over evil has relied on those who believe in empathy and kindness, summoning the steel spine needed to defend those values that by their nature leave us vulnerable to attack. This community knows that. You have lived and breathed this fight for generations. Our hope lies in this room. The fact that we are still here today means that we have the faith and courage that we will win the battles that really matter. Now, when I first ran for governor in 2018, I started every single stump speech by saying, and this will tell you why Donald Trump doesn't like me very much. I said at the beginning of every stump speech, everything we care about is under siege by a racist, misogynist, homophobic, xenophobic Donald Trump. And I ended every single speech with a question to the crowd. Are you ready for the fight? So here we are again. Everything we care about is under siege. And so I guess I just have one question for all of you tonight. Are you ready for the fight? Are you ready for the fight? Let's go get them, everybody! Let's go get them!
That was Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker at the Human Rights Campaign's annual Los Angeles dinner. Thanks for discovering This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions, Inc. News Wrap was reported this week by Rhett and Marcus Nafra and produced by Brian DeShazer. Our correspondent was Lauren Schmidt. The Pet Shop Boys and John Lennon performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley. Listener donors make this program possible. Ask about how you can join them. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email us at info@thiswayout.org, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078 USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon, associate producer Lucia Chappell, and the entire This Way Out crew, I'm Brian DeShazer. Thanks for listening. Online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts. And on WBSU, Brockport, New York, 2BMI, Griffith, New South Wales, KFGM, Missoula, Montana, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned.
A legal ID. You are listening to KBOO Portland, and I am Dr. Demento, just barely legal.
Thank you for tuning in to KBOO Community Radio during this special programming campaign, All Thrills, No Frills, Volume 4. Now through